Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk. My partner is Jeff Fiegels right back in the house. The
yes,
number for you is 201-939-4513. We got two great guests today. Phil Savage does Radio Alabama. He's their analyst and also runs the Reese's Senior Bowl. So obviously he knows a ton about this draft class. And then we have Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, coming your way at around 12:30. So between those two guests, we will try to take a couple of your phone calls, talk a little draft or whatever else you want to talk about with the New York Giants. But let's get right to it.
Whoa, Phil,
go ahead. What's up, Jeff?
Right.
And then later in the show, at the end of the show.
That's a big thing.
Charlie's Lobsters are here, and Jeff will unveil them at the end of the show. I forgot about that, Jeff.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want everybody to tune in. You know, they don't want to leave after the interviews and stuff.
Jeff is very excited about his lobsters.
I don't know how many are in there, but
we'll find out.
At least one.
All right, let's go to Phil Savage. He is the radio analyst for Alabama football, also runs the Senior Bowl. Phil, I was down in Mobile. You did an excellent job putting the event on this year. You do a fantastic job. We appreciate the time today.
Hey, Phil.
Well, yeah, hey, guys. Well, thank you so much. We have a very dedicated staff, and, you know, most people think of the Reese's Senior Bowl as a one-week out-of-the-year event, but we have stuff going on down here, you know, locally and on our website year-round. So you guys get a chance to see sort of the culmination of a year's worth of work. But it did go quite well this year, obviously, with players like Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, and then maybe the story of this draft, Shaquem Griffin being part of our game this year.
All right, let's start with Alabama. We're going to try to bang through. There's so many guys from the Crimson Tide, Phil. I mean, you're going to have 10 guys on the first 2 days of the draft going off the board. So we're going to try to do one question on each guy and then get to your overall view of the draft. Let's start with Daron Payne first. Two-part question. Do you see him in the NFL as a one or a three technique? And how do you see his, I'll call it inconsistency, where he looked like a much more active and better player in the final two games of the year compared to what he did earlier in the season?
Yeah, Daron Payne is a big man athlete. I mean, this is a very athletic, big-bodied interior defensive lineman that can stack at the point of attack. Then he can work down the line of scrimmage. And although he doesn't have much sack production, you know, the Bama scheme for the interior defensive lineman really doesn't allow for a lot of freedom in pass rush. So I think that that's an area where he will improve the most. So is he a one technique, a nose, or a three technique? He probably fits best as a one, but I think he could play either one. This is a really gifted individual. He's only a junior, so he's got plenty of upside. And I think if he had waited another year to come out, he'd probably be a top 10 pick next year.
Well, talk about top 10 pick. I would imagine the next guy we're going to talk about, Minkah Fitzpatrick, is going to be one of those guys. You know, you look at the career that he had at Alabama, probably one of the best cornerbacks or safeties to come out of Alabama in the Saban era. Tell me a little bit about Minkah Fitzpatrick. You see him playing that strong safety position, and a little bit more about his ability to cover receivers and all that good stuff.
Yeah, my first exposure to Minkah, when he signed with Alabama, they posted a video of him on top of one of an apartment building there in New Jersey somewhere, and he was doing, you know, defensive back footwork drills in the snow. And I'm like, wow, this guy looks like he might be something special. He showed up as a true freshman, became an immediate starter, contributed as a corner, as a left corner, and then played in the slot some. And then, of course, midway through his second year, Eddie Jackson goes down the safety with an injury. They decide to move Minkah back to safety to take his place. He continued in that nickel role for the last year and a half. So essentially spent a year and a half at corner and then a year plus at safety. His primary spot, though, is as that slot corner, where he can support the run, blitz off the edge, and then cover. Ironically enough, I've been doing the radio for Bama since 2009. My favorite player had been Landon Collins. I just loved watching Landon play. He had a temperament that you love to have on your team. And he was my number one until Minkah showed up.
Wow.
And Minkah sort of knocked Landon off the pedestal, so to speak, at least in my view. I think he's a tremendous football player. If I were a team, I would continue to look at him as a corner with the ability to slide inside. I think safety is a position that he can go to later. But, you know, to me, people saying that he's a safety, I think they've forgotten how good he was as a corner out on the edge.
We're joined by Phil Savage, Alabama Radio, runs the Reese's Senior Bowl. Calvin Ridley, I kind of caught back up with this tape. I had watched him previously, watched him again this morning, Phil, and it just strikes me how his route running is just NFL caliber, and he creates separation as well as anybody I've seen in this class at the top of the route. He's so fundamentally sound. But the nicks on him were that maybe he didn't test so well at the combine, had a good 40 and 3 cone, but his jumping and explosive tests really weren't what some people look for. But when I see the tape, I see things that should translate to the NFL level, and his numbers would have been a lot better at Alabama if he had a more passing-oriented quarterback playing with him.
Yeah, he's a really good football player. You know, one of the things about Calvin is he's a little bit older. You know, people say, okay, he's a junior coming from Alabama. Well, he turned 20 his freshman year with the Tide, so he'll be 23 years old by the time his rookie season rolls around. But this is a prospect that can play underneath the defense. He's got a lot of savvy working, finding those open areas for a quarterback. And then he's got the ability to go over the top. And, you know, I would say of the receivers that have come through Alabama, namely Julio Jones, who's just a powerhouse of a player, and then Amari Cooper, who was extremely fluid. You know, both of those guys went in the top six of the draft. I personally never saw Calvin in that category, but I do think he's a first-rounder. And I think he's a player that comes in and can contribute right away because, as you pointed out, he's got a lot of fundamental techniques already under his belt, and you would think he's just going to be a plug-in and play, a contributor right away for a team that's in need of a wide receiver.
You see him as more of a Z than an X at the pro level, you would think?
You know, I think that one value of Calvin is that he's played outside, he's played in the slot, move him around in motion. He's really got an ability to comprehend a lot of football in terms of the playbook and schemes in a given week. So I guess if I were pinned down, I'd say he's more of a Z because of that flexibility of moving around.
Rashawn Evans, obviously a tremendous leader. He was picked as one of the captains, one of the four permanent captains for the Alabama team. You know, some of the draft people have him picked as maybe the second, third, fourth linebacker in the draft coming up this year. Tell me a little bit about Rashawn Evans and where you think maybe he'll go and what round you see him trying to drop into or even moving up.
Yeah, Rashawn is very talented. Of course, he hails from Auburn, Alabama, but ended up playing in Tuscaloosa. And you know, there were major high hopes for him coming into the year. But he ended up having a couple of ticky-tack injuries in September, sort of took away from some of his production early on. But if you put on the LSU game, which was early November, that was probably his best game of the year. And you see everything that you want out of a linebacker. He can play in the box, off the line of scrimmage. He can extend out and cover out in space, running backs and tight ends. And then he's really an excellent blitzer, either from depth or from the edge. And, you know, the value in Rashawn Evans is going to be that versatility of being able to play inside and or outside, because really coming into this past season, he was Alabama's best outside rusher.
Yeah.
And when he was hurt in September, it really affected their defense. And then once he came back, you know, they began to put all the pieces together on that side of the ball. But Rashawn Evans is sort of a C.J. Mosley type prospect. C.J. went, you know, 16th to the Ravens a few years ago. I wouldn't say that Rashawn is as fluid of an athlete as C.J., but I do think he's a more explosive contact player in terms of his tackling and his ability to be physical against offensive linemen and running backs.
If you need him to cover underneath on third downs and you're not going to blitz him on that particular play, can you trust him in space to stick with tight ends or guys coming over the middle and zone?
Yeah, I tell you, the other thing that he did in 2015, Bama played Clemson in the national title game. Of course, he was only a sophomore that year. But he was the key defender in that game because Clemson had Alabama on the ropes with Deshaun Watson and company.
Yeah.
And finally, they put Rashawn in there to mirror Deshaun. And he had a couple of sacks, a couple quarterback pressures where he was the mirror defender on Deshaun Watson. That was a key element in that game. And that was really sort of a glimpse of what Rashawn was going to bring to the table as an upperclassman.
How about the safety, Ronnie Harrison? Do you see him more as a box guy? Is he somebody you can put out there in cover three in the middle of the field to cover and react to the ball in the air? Where do you see him fitting best in the NFL?
Yeah, of course, Ronnie was a high-profile prospect coming out of Tallahassee, Florida. He showed up at Alabama, started off on special teams, ultimately got a starting role. And, you know, once Minkah Fitzpatrick was moved to safety because of the injury to Eddie Jackson, that sort of overshadowed Ronnie Harrison to a degree. But I'm telling you, as a standalone talent, he's got some goods to him. I mean, he is a very physical run support player, and I do think he has enough cover ability. Not only has he played in the deep part of the field, but he's dropped down in the box and shadowed tight ends and third receivers.
Okay.
He's another junior that has entered the draft that, look, if he goes back next year, you're probably talking about a top 15 pick, perhaps. In this particular draft, he's probably more like a late first rounder, early second, but I like the player a lot. He is very young. He's a third-year junior, no red shirt involved, so you would expect that there's plenty of upside for Ronnie who can stand by his own talent relative to Minkah Fitzpatrick and some of these other guys.
So we're going to go a little bit for the offensive position here. Bradley Bozeman, the center for Alabama last year and the year before, kind of had a career where he started out just kind of being on the roster, not getting much playing time. And then the last couple of years really has come into his own playing that center position. A big guy for a center, 6'5", 317 pounds. That's a load of a guy to move around there. Give me a little bit about Bradley and where you see him coming up in the draft this year.
Yeah, I tell you, a couple years ago, Bama lost Ryan Kelly, graduated, ended up being a first-round pick to the Indianapolis Colts. And one of the major concerns for Alabama was who's going to be the center, who's going to be the quarterback, who's going to be the tailback, because they lost Ryan Kelly, Derrick Henry, and then Jake Coker had moved on as well as their quarterback. And Bradley Bozeman went in there as a first-time starter his junior year. I would say that he's been a very solid college player. You mentioned the size. He is a big body in the middle. Not overly athletic. Probably ends up on the ground too much, quite honestly, for some of the teams that are out there that are looking for more of the quicker, agile center. But I tell you, Bradley's got a lot of intangibles. He was also a captain this year. And, you know, when these teams put a big nose on a center, you need somebody with some girth, and he has that. The biggest knock on Bradley is going to be, you know, just the overall mobility in terms of playing out in space, you know, getting up to the second level on an athletic linebacker. But I suspect he'll be a late round choice. If not, he'd be an excellent undrafted free agent because he does have a really nice pedigree over the last 2 years.
How about DeShawn Hand, Phil? Kind of that 3-4, you know, 5 technique, D-end in college. He's 6'4", 295. You know, he's not the guy that's going to bend the edge for you. Where do you see him fitting in at the pro level? Do you think he could be a 3 technique defensive tackle? Do you think that's where teams would target him?
Yeah, DeShawn Hand, of course, was the number one recruit in America when he showed up at Alabama. And I think he's one of those players, and I'm just speculating here, just sort of, you know, putting my NFL hat on. He's one of those players that was so big, so gifted, so talented through high school. He gets to Alabama. He never really had to push himself and work that hard because he was always better than everyone else. Well, now you get to college, and some of the other guys have obviously caught up to him. I mean, this was the number one recruit coming out of high school, and now he's seen as probably a second or third round pick. So he's got some work to do, but I think if he can really devote himself and because he's got a great personality and he's got a ton of talent, but he has not really reached his potential in terms of position fit, you know, 3-4 defensive end, that 5 technique, and then kick down inside as a third down or subtype rusher. I think that'd be the role for DeShawn Hand. And I tell you, if he ends up being drafted, say, in the late second or third round, he's going to end up being a nice value for somebody because you can expect that he can be a 3-down player.
Right.
If he can make this adjustment from college to pro and really get the mentality that, you know what, I can't worry about what I've done in the past. I've got to worry about what I'm going to do in the future and really dedicate himself. I think he can be a you know, 7-8 year pro in the NFL.
Well, you know, we don't get to talk a lot about kickers and punters on the show most of the time. I try to bring it up as many times as I can, but I get shut down. But, you know, we got to talk about J.K. Scott. I mean, here's a guy that I've watched over the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm pretty impressed with his ability to do anything he wants with the football, especially at the level that he's playing at with Alabama and playing in some of the big games. Tell me a little bit about J.K. Scott. And, I think he has a position in the pros, in my opinion, coming up, being the punter that I was. I see a lot of good things in him. Tell me a little bit about J.K.
Yeah, Jeff, I think you're on the right guy. You know, he was really Alabama's secret weapon.
No question.
Over his career, because, you know, Nick Saban's philosophy with his quarterbacks is that, look, we want to end every drive with a kick of some kind, a punt, a field goal, or an extra point. And when Bama's offense bogged down at times, J.K. could flip the field if they were on the minus side of the field. And then if they were around the 50-yard line, you know, he could pin teams inside the 20. Yep. And now that team's got to go the long way against that Bama defense. And so he was a huge part of their formula for winning, you know, and obviously a couple national championships here in the last 3 years. But J.K.'s got classic punter size. He's 6'5". He's got the long levers. He really is capable of driving the ball down the middle of the field. He can directional punt. He can also do the pooch punts down inside the 10-yard line. So I think he's got a long career in the NFL ahead of him. He and Johnny Townsend from Florida, they were both of our punters here at the Reese's Senior Bowl. And, you know, I would have a tough time deciding on which one or the other, because Johnny's outstanding as well. But I think that both of those guys will end up punting in the league for a long time.
Phil, final question on the Alabama guys, and I'll get your take on what the Giants should do in the draft. Two corners, both seniors. They kind of been overshadowed a little bit, I think, by some of the other, you know, stars that are go probably in the first or second round. Anthony Averett and Tony Brown, where do you see them falling in the draft, and how do you project them to the NFL level?
Yeah, you got those two. Plus, don't forget Levi Wallace.
That's right.
Who's actually the starter opposite of Anthony Averett. And Tony Brown was the nickel corner this year at different times throughout the season. But let's start with Anthony first. You know, he's from you guys' area. He's from New Jersey. One thing you can't coach is speed, and he's got it. He's a sub-4.4 guy on almost any given day. And so he played really well the last 2 years, and particularly in 16, his junior year, because teams really challenged him because Marlon Humphrey, the Ravens' first-round pick a year ago, was on the opposite side. So people tried to target Anthony. He withstood that, and by the end of the 16 season, teams were actually going towards Humphrey's side more because he had a hamstring and really wasn't 100% down the stretch of that season. In terms of Tony Brown, he's always had the physical traits. He looks like a corner cut out of the Hollywood backlot, you know, of a movie. If you were trying to chisel a corner and say, hey, this is what he would look like and this is how he would run. He's a 4.3 guy as well. He's fast. He can be physical at times. The issue there is just there was not much consistency, and I'm not sure how much trust they had in terms of him executing within the defense that they play. And, you know, with Nick Saban, and the defensive coaches they've had there, you really have to know what to do, and you have to be on the same page with the other 10 defenders. I think that was probably part of the hang-up with Tony, but, wow, he has blown up this pre-draft run-up. He's run fast. He's worked out well. I was at the Bama Pro Day. I mean, he looks like a first-round corner in a workout, but obviously it goes beyond that. And then with Levi Wallace, he's a fascinating story. He is the rare walk-on who ended up emerging and actually becoming a starter for Alabama. And what happened is in the Florida State game, which was the opener this year, they tried to play a younger player that really was not ready for prime time, so to speak, had a couple blown fuses in the first quarter. They exit that player. They put Levi Wallace in. And, guys, believe it or not, through the first 6-8 games of the season for Alabama, and I do a ton of interviews down here across the state, I said, he's the MVP for the Alabama defense.
Wow.
The defense littered with all these guys that are going to be first-rounders. And he's been the key cog because they could trust him. They put him on the field. He held up quite well.
Love it.
As the left corner for Alabama this year. That allowed them to keep Minka Fitzpatrick at safety. It allowed them to put Minka down inside the slot in their sub packages. And Levi Wallace was a huge contributor to Alabama's success this year. He's not going to have great measurables, but in terms of the nuances and having his and playing with his eyes, having the eye control and the instincts for the game, he's got all those things. So I think he's got a reasonable chance to make a team next year as well.
Phil, final question. The Giants at two, they really kind of control a little bit what's going to happen early in this draft. They can go any number of directions. You got the quarterbacks that you're real familiar with, your top three position players, throwing Minka Fitzpatrick if you like, along with Quentin Nelson, Bradley Chubb, Saquon Barkley. If you're sitting at two and you're Dave Gettleman, what are you thinking?
I'm going to subscribe to the thought out there that if the Browns take Josh Allen, then Sam Darnold's going to be the pick for the New York Giants, because I get the sense that Darnold might be the guy that stands above the rest of these quarterbacks for the Giants. If Darnold goes one, then I think the Giants will be looking at either Saquon Barkley or Nick Chubb, or Bradley Chubb, rather, the defensive end from NC State. Can you find a defensive end in this draft in the second or third round? Maybe you can. I think most people feel like you can always find a running back somewhere in the second or third round. We saw it last year with Kareem Hunt. Alvin Kamara obviously did well for the Saints. So if it were me, I'm thinking they would lean towards Chubb if Darnold is off the board. But can Saquon Barkley have an immediate impact on the offensive line and Eli Manning? There's no question about that. He's a sensational talent, and we've seen running backs go early here that have contributed, like Zeke Elliott, like Leonard Fournette in recent years. So I don't think they can go wrong with any of those guys, quite honestly. And, of course, we haven't even talked about the potential of trading back. But
oh, we have.
I'm not sure that they're going to do that.
Oh, we have.
I think they'll stay there and pick a player.
If you had to choose between Mayfield or Rosen, what direction would you go? Because, Phil, I got to be honest, I go back and forth every day on which guy I like better.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's part of the answer to how I'm going to frame this. See, if you asked me this a week ago, I'd have them in a certain order. You asked me, they'd have them in a different order. And so, to me, when there's that kind of question mark, man, do you just step back and say, are we overvaluing all these quarterbacks? And let's take a non-quarterback. It's a tough thing to do, but the Giants are in position to do it because of Eli's presence. And look, if Eli can play another two or three years, maybe they take a swing at one of these second or third round quarterbacks and try to develop someone behind the scenes relative to what they think of Davis Webb. And see, that's an unknown that none of us have an indication on. What does Pat Shurmur think about Davis Webb and his future upside? Because if they feel pretty good about Davis, then maybe they should just go non-quarterback there at the top of the draft and carry on. So
yeah,
it's going to be a fascinating Thursday night at the draft, that first round. I don't think any of us really have any idea what's going to happen, particularly in that top five.
Absolutely not. And then maybe they handcuff Davis up with a Mike White or a Kyle Loletta, two guys that we did see at the Reese's Senior Bowl. Phil, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Tremendous
Thank
information.
You,
I know you're busy today, and we'll touch base with you down the road, all right?
Okay, guys. I really enjoy it, and good luck in the draft.
Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
We can't wait. Less than 2 weeks away, Phil Savage. Runs the Senior Bowl. And, of course, he's the radio analyst for Alabama football.
Let me ask you a question. So do you think it's – well, obviously I know the answer to this, but I'm trying to compare the two. This NFL draft coming up, with all the question marks about the quarterbacks and who the Giants are going to take and all the trades, this is almost like filling out a bracket for the NCAA. I mean, it's like it's impossible to get this thing correct.
So much fun.
Right?
So much fun.
But it is a lot of fun. And like you, and at least you're honest about the fact that John does change his opinions about every week about which quarterback should be going. But I will tell you this.
Well, remember, I have been on Darnold at one the whole time, and I'm still there. It's the Mayfield-Rosen thing that gets me.
Well, here's the thing. I'm still in agreement with a lot of what Phil had said. I still think, and he kind of makes a good point. If you're not really true set on any of these quarterbacks, then just go the opposite way and say, you know what, that's a safe bet. However, it always can come back and bite you, and later on.
Can't hit home run if you don't swing the bat.
I agree. It's just very difficult, but we'll see what happens. And it is kind of intriguing to see. It's getting close, guys. Finally.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Getting real close. No one's tipping their hat, though.
Nope.
Nothing. Nobody is just saying, nothing's coming out. You know, maybe that happens in the last week of the before we start getting a little, you know, some guys start, there's some smoke coming out of the chimney here. Who knows?
All right, we got Dan Orlovsky in about 5 minutes. We'll take a couple calls between now and then. And one piece of breaking news, I'm not even sure if Dan Salamone, so they said who's running the show today, but Mike, Adam Schefter and Todd Archer, at least according to the information Jeff Fiegels just gave me, report that the Cowboys are going to cut Dez Bryant, which is surprising, not that they're letting him go, but that they would let him go now because they can't use the money they're saving on the cap on anybody, but it's so late in the process. It just seems like a weird timing thing to me, but whatever. 201-939-4513.
Would this be one of the June 1st guys?
I think they might just take the whole hit this year so they don't have to extend it. We'll see. Who knows? Let's go to I don't see any calls up here. There we are. I wasn't scrolled all the way up. Marco in Connecticut. He's up first. Hi, Marco.
Marco.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, buddy?
Marco?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to Orlovsky. I'm a Connecticut guy, and he's followed his career, and I've heard him a couple times. He's doing a great job with draft coverage.
Absolutely.
Hey, real quick, guys. I know we're pressed for time here. So yep. I'm just trying to think through this number two pick, and I want to see what you guys think about the way I'm going with
it. Be careful what you ask.
It's not so much who. I'm going based on what Gettleman and Shermer have said when they've talked, and they haven't tipped their hands one way or another, but they've been firm on a couple things. And one, and this is what gets in the way of my thinking. Gettleman has said Hall of Fame pick.
Yep.
And he has said that this guy has to be a number two pick in any draft.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So then we get to and I don't think he's being tongue-in-cheek, by the way, when he says a Hall of Fame pick. I think he means that.
No, I buy it.
So then Shermer also has talked about, look back at the guys the Giants have drafted when they've picked number two, LT. He's also brought up number three, Carl Banks.
Yep.
I can't get that off my mind. So I think if you're looking at just positional value, take the quarterback out. For a second, just take it out. Because I don't know how they feel about Webb and Darnold, just like Phil Savage said. But if they don't want a quarterback and they're picking number two, I think Chubb has got to be the guy based on what you're getting from a pass rusher. You're getting a pass rusher there. But everything you hear about Barkley is he's got the Hall of Fame pedigree. And so does Quentin Nelson. But I don't factor Nelson into it because he's a guard.
Yep.
So my thing with Chubb is, is Chubb as good of a D-end as Barkley is as a running back?
I would say probably not, but it's close.
Okay, so then I'm thrown back into the running back agreement. And John, I'll say this. If Chubb is drafted at two, is it fair to say that he's got to be Lawrence Taylor to validate the pick?
No. No, he doesn't have to be Lawrence Taylor.
Why?
Because LT is the best defensive player in NFL history,
I don't think
Marco.
There's too many people that have been
I know it's not fair, but Barkley is also what they talk about Barkley like he's a generational player.
I understand, but to me and Marco, we got to run. Thanks for the call. We appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
If he's Joey Bosa, you're fine. I mean, if you get a Joey Bosa caliber player, you sign up for that.
There's no question.
Sure,
and can
that's great.
He be that kind of guy? Absolutely.
I think he
can be.
Chubb can
be that kind of guy.
And if you guys want to learn more about Chubb, we had the NC State guy on yesterday talk about it, and we had Dane Brugler 2 days ago talk a lot about Chubb. So go back in the archives, check it out. I think he's a little bit better than some people give him credit for. Dan, I'm going to try to squeeze in this other caller real quick. Dan, line two, Christian in New York. Look at him real quick for me. Thank you very much.
Hey, Christian.
Hey, guys. I have to say, I do feel a little better about Chubb ever since that interview you guys had on the show, because the high motor is just so important. I have to say, like when I was talking about, you know.
You got to be quick here, Christian. We have a guest coming
up. Yeah, sorry.
Speed it up. It's okay.
Yeah. I just feel like he's a little closer to Derek Barnett than he is to Solomon Thomas. So that's why I was thinking about him going maybe a little bit later.
That's interesting.
In the draft than some thought. But
I would be shocked if he's not off the board in the top six
or
seven
picks.
When
we say later, I don't think you're like, we're talking about like on one hand later, you can probably talk about.
Yes.
Yeah, right around 10.
No,
he will not make it to 10.
No, he's probably not even going to make it to 7.
I guess so. I mean, I guess just quarterbacks included. If some teams want to pair the top shelf with the premium position with guys like Denzel Ward. Or
I promise
Minka
you he will be one of the top three players
off
the board.
That's a premium position from this type of player.
He'll be one of the top three non-quarterbacks picked.
I guess so, yeah. I guess it's all just how you value certain ones, because I think the corners would be just as good. So, really, it's whichever guys you like at that point.
All right. Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the call, buddy.
And, and Marco brought up a good point. Does he have to be Lawrence Taylor, talking about Chubb?
No.
No, he doesn't. Nobody has become Lawrence Taylor. The point is, do you need that type of player at the number two pick from the defensive end? Yes, you do. And I think that guy can put on – I mean, I saw interviews and has watched some tape on the guy. His motor is ridiculous.
And he's got great technique, too,
and I think
–
and he seems to me from the interviews and stuff like a really good dude.
Oh, yeah. No, I heard great reviews about what he is as a guy.
You're getting everything you want out of that pick from character to work ethic to the possibilities of being a Hall of Fame football player and being your number two pick. There it is. It's right there.
And by the way, he scored in the top 5% in the athletic testing for defensive ends over the last 30 years.
And by the way, do the Giants need another defensive end?
I think they do, Jeff.
I think they do, too.
All right, let's go to our next guest. He's Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, native of Connecticut. I'm sure you remember his time with the Lions and his other teams in the National Football League. And Dan's doing a great job of breaking down on Twitter some of these college quarterbacks coming out in the NFL draft. And we welcome him to the show. Dan, you got John Schmelk and Jeff Fiegels in JohnGiants.com. How are you today?
I'm doing well, guys. What's going on?
Nothing much. Happy for you to jump on. I really enjoyed your podcast with Peter King. I enjoyed some of your tweets breaking down some of the tape. So let's get right to it one by one here with the quarterback. Sam Darnold, he's the number one guy on my board. Do you value him that same way of the current quarterback class? And why do you have him there if you do? And where do you think he needs to make the most improvement?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, I look at it like this. If you're picking early in the draft, you're 1,000% trying to find people who change the game for you. And so if you're looking at the quarterback position when it comes to that, those guys have to have traits that you can't coach. That you just, there's not drills for them to get better at.
Yep.
So there's three things with Sam Darnold that stick out to me when it comes to that. One, he's got, and I've coined it, this kind of magical sloppiness. Everything he does is just a little bit sloppy. It is, you know, and it's very Romo Roethlisberger-esque. Sometimes that sloppiness gets him in trouble, but man, it creates some magic that you just can't replicate, you know, in a guy. You can't drill that into a guy. The second thing is, and this is a really important trait, he's got this unique ability to judge the angles and speeds of how his guys are going to run their routes. And that matters in the NFL. The tape shows this for him in college. And that matters in the NFL because in the NFL, things happen faster and they happen smaller. And anticipation is so important. That's not a – you can't just – that's something you're born with and you develop. You can't drill that into a guy. And so that trait is huge. And then the last thing, he's accurate with bad feet. And – from a guy who had to play on some bad teams, and I know what NFL pockets are like, that, with a perfect pocket, I was pretty accurate. They're just non-existent in the NFL. Unless you're Dak and you go to the brick wall, they're just non-existent. So to have the trait where you could be accurate with bad feet, one, I don't have a drill because I'm not going to coach bad habits in you, so I'm not going to do that. Two, I know with better feet, you'll be even more accurate. So, like, those traits that he has that you can't coach into a guy are such differentiators for me. And then the thing, you know, his flaws, all these guys have flaws or warts.
Sure.
Can you help them? You know, the turnovers. Well, Matt Ryan had 19 coming out of school. Romo had 16 coming out of school. Russell Wilson, his junior year, had 14. Breeze had 12. So you got to figure out how they're happening. You know, the ball security, I was with Matthew Stafford in 2010 when he had 10 fumbles. In 2014, he had 10 fumbles. In 2015, he had 2. Because he made more of an emphasis. He protected it more. 2 hands on the ball. So you can fix, in my opinion, you can fix and help those flaws of his.
And, you know, Dan, I think you're in a very unique position. As someone that played the position in the pros and understands what it's like to go from college to NFL and try to translate those skills. And I was having a conversation a couple years ago with Kevin Gilbride, former Giants offensive coordinator, and he talked to me and he goes, John, back when I used to evaluate quarterbacks 15, 20 years ago, I used to look at the arm strength, you know, can he spin it, can he throw it through wind? But he goes, the more I did this, the more I understand what makes a great quarterback in the NFL is your ability to slow everything down, anticipate, and see what's happening. Because so many times, like you mentioned, it's the NFL. You don't have a clean pocket. You're looking at your feet. And to your ability to process things, to me, is really maybe the most valuable thing you can see in these quarterbacks. Because I'm not sure you can coach that up in guys. You either can slow it down and you see everything, or you can't. What do you think are the most important traits when you look at these college guys, if they can translate what they do in college to the pros?
Yeah, I mean, I'll play off what you said. You know, if you look at the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL over the last 3 or 4 years, it's going to look like an EKG-gram. There's no more. There, no longer is there a prototype.
Right.
There's just not. They come in all shapes and sizes now. And so when you're looking at it and you're going, well, what do we need? Well, everyone coins or throws around the term processes information. Very few people know what it means. So processing information at the quarterback position is this. You get your play. Now your process starts. Okay, this is my play. And it sounds silly, but a lot of quarterbacks struggle with even being able to visualize their play. So I've got my offensive play. It comes into my helmet. Here's my offensive play. This is the situation. Two things have to come into mind. What's the problem of your play? Because every play, there's a problem. Whether it's a run left, if I've got too many people numbers-wise defensively, I've got to have an answer. And then there's an opportunity for your play. Okay, here, you know, I've got Odell Beckham on a post. You know, is there an opportunity for me to throw that post? And then I'll flip it. Then you have the defense. And the defense is going to present a problem to you. Okay, this is my protection. The defense is showing a blitz. I don't have enough people to block. What's my answer? And then there's an opportunity from the defense. Okay, I've got press man. I could take a go ball shot. And here's the thing. You need to do all that in 4 seconds, 70 out of 70. You can't be 35 out of 70. You can't be 45 out of 70. Then you're just okay. You've got to be 100 out of 100. And your brain has to go. Every single play is different. Every play. And so you have to have that process. And a lot of guys struggle with it. So if you can do it at the college level, you're so much more advanced when you get to the NFL.
And, you know, a lot of people, it's why everybody pretty much says that the quarterback position is one of the hardest positions to play in sports. And you obviously did it well, and you understand the position. I think that one thing that's hard to understand to really evaluate out of these guys when we're talking about that processing information, you can put somebody on a whiteboard and you can do all those things, but until the things come fly, the darts are flying at you live and things like that, it's almost like a crapshoot. You have to take a guess on some of these. What are some of the things that, from a scouting perspective or a coaching perspective, do these guys go through with these top four guys that we're talking about that will give them some sort of an answer that they can process this information on the field, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I've been around guys who can do it on paper. Then yeah. Even in a walker, you can get it. But then when the game gets going, it's a different world. So I think what I find confusing sometimes is we have to watch tape. We have to watch tape. And if kids are showing the inability to do it at the college level, where it will be its easiest, because at the NFL, it will only get harder.
Sure.
At the NFL level.
Sure.
Defenses will move faster, more detailed, disguise better. Like, I look at Josh Allen, and I've been outspoken about some of the things that I've seen him struggle with on tape, and he struggles with that very thing, that plan and process. And you don't think that if he goes number one to Cleveland, Tyrell Austin at Cincinnati is going to go, wait, he's struggling with basic stuff? I'm throwing the kitchen sink at him. So, you know, I think evaluators, you need to watch the tape. And then you need to understand there's a big difference between understanding it and executing it. And you've got to get to the point to realize if a kid can execute it. And to figure that out is, you know, if I was able to do that right now, I'd be making $15 million a year as a manager somewhere.
Listen.
I think it's hard, but at the end of the day, you've got to go back to tape.
Yeah.
You have to go back to tape because – I could get my wife to understand the stuff on a dry erase board, and she can go talk ball at some point. I could teach her enough. Execution. If they can't execute in college, you can't ask them to execute in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah, it's tough, Dan, and I think – and we're joined by Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback. And I think some of the stuff you showed from Josh Allen, and we'll go to him as the next quarterback here because a lot of people do believe – that the Browns would select him number one, which to me is very, very risky because of some of the problems you've mentioned. What are some of those processing issues you've seen from Allen when you watch his college tape at Wyoming?
Yeah, so you, like I said, you just watch all the tape. And there's a clip, and I started seeing some clips where I was just like, huh, you know, why is he struggling with some of the basic stuff? You know, why is he late to everything, late reactionary and, you know, late to simpler throws? And it's not only the throws, but then it goes into the whole aspects of playing quarterback, because there's a difference between throwing and playing quarterback. And so I'm watching tape, and as I'm watching tape, he's doing a lot of stuff at the line of scrimmage. There's a clip against Iowa where he goes up to the line of scrimmage like we see quarterbacks do all the time, and it looks like he changes the protection. And the offensive line slides. All five guys slide to the left, and the right defensive end comes unblocked. And he stands there and has no anticipatory reaction that he thinks that defensive end is unblocked. It's like it surprises him. And for me, it's like, you might have sent the offensive line the wrong way. I don't care about that, but you have to know what you did and know what your problem. And it looks like he's surprised by it. And so that is alarming to me that you're not doing that. I mean, it was a four-man pressure. It wasn't like Iowa brought everybody, so that's alarming. And then I'm watching the Oregon game, and Wyoming is playing Oregon. Wyoming's in a five-man protection, which is one of the easiest protections for a quarterback, because we just know, all right, if one guy on the defense blitzes, I'm in trouble. And the Will linebacker for Oregon blitzes, and everyone for Wyoming's looking hot but Josh Allen. And it's, you know, for that stuff to me, it looks like, again, he's surprised by it. And so that, to me, that not having that process, it's only going to get harder. And for coaches, listen, there's 32 quarterback coaches in the NFL. If any of them could really expedite that learning for a kid, he wouldn't be a quarterback coach. You know? So it's just really hard to teach. It's like getting a kid Spanish 101, moving him to Mexico and say, go function every day like everyone else does it there. It's impossible.
I hope nobody does that to me ever.
It's impossible.
It is impossible. You know, and it's difficult, and that's why I'm asking the questions, because I think that the one thing that you said is you can see it on tape, and that's the only way you're going to be able to see people, because a lot of times with athletes, you know, they're going to show you what they do consistently. They're going to get better through time and getting into the NFL, but the underlying problems that you're going to have, or they're not going to change a lot of things, is what you see in some of the tape that they watch. And it's interesting when you talk about Josh and some of the – if you're a quarterback, I never – play quarterback other than high school, is that the last thing I want to do is change a protection, because I'm changing a protection to help myself. And you know what I'm saying? And not to know that there's a guy that's going to come and kill me. That would have a red flag in my mind too, by the way. So it's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing was, I mean, when we would always play teams that were heavy blitz teams or whatever, the consensus was, you don't ever want to think that you're going to be perfect. You just have to know what the problem is. You have to know what you did and know, you know, okay, what's the downside to this? And when continuously on tape shows me that he doesn't know that, I go, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially since Carson Wentz did.
Yep, absolutely.
They're in the same offense. Carson Wentz, I went back and watched his film. He doesn't show those flaws. And then people rave about Carson Wentz right now? Wow, he's really, really smart.
Yeah, well, that does help from the quarterback position. Yeah, are really smart.
Yeah, and I think that lends it to something else you mentioned a couple answers ago too, Dan. It's the concept of anticipation. And I think it's not just anticipating the type of stuff you just talked about, who's coming from where and then what do you do. But I think also when you watch Allen a little bit, I don't see him releasing the ball before the guy gets out of his break. I don't see him like you saw with Darnold, where he knows based on angles and depth where his receivers are going to be. I'm not sure Allen has that anticipation, and as I'm sure, as you well aware of a lot better than I am, in the NFL, if you're not throwing the ball before the guy breaks open, you're late.
Oh, there's no doubt. And that's, you know, that's relatively common with guys who've got big arms because they haven't needed it, you know. A guy like Case Keenum, he's got great anticipation. Why?
He has to.
Because he's needed it, you know? So that's common with guys that have big arms. I just know this. Anticipation is not something that gets taught in 12 months. Mm-hmm. Case Keenum didn't become Eli Manning didn't become a guy who anticipates the ball really well in 12 months. He's been doing it since he was 8. So for people to think like, oh, they'll just teach him to anticipate. What? What? He's been not anticipating for 20 years. What makes you think he's going to be able to be taught to anticipate in 12 months? On air, will he be able to? Absolutely. 7-on-7? Probably. When you're getting hit in the mouth? No. It's just those aren't traits. That's when you're looking at these guys, you go, can I fix the warts? Can I fix the fall? Can we really? And that's just not a trait that you can teach a guy, because it's years and years and years of reps.
Dan, you played the position. You know it. We got guys that come into training camp every year, some that you know and some that you don't. One thing that we do know about Baker Mayfield is the guy can compete. And I think that a lot of times you're looking at the measurables from this guy as far as his height and, you know, those kinds of things. I would stay away from him just because of the height standpoint, but I know there's a lot of people that like him because of the other attributes that he brings to that position, leadership being one of them, a guy that's a little bit gutsy.
Accurate.
What do you think? Accurate. I mean, you look at the numbers from this guy from last year. He checks all the boxes as far as, you know, completion percent, all that stuff. What do you think about Baker Mayfield, and do you like him? Do you not like him? Give us a little bit of something about him coming from a quarterback position.
Yeah, I like him. It's hard for me to sit here and you know, buy into somebody who's going, I really don't like him, because here I'll give you kind of two sides of the coin. His numbers were great, yeah. But when you watch tape, Oklahoma manufactured a ton of offense for him,
That's true.
You know, and a lot of those plays aren't going to carry in the NFL. They just won't. Defenses are faster and smarter and more prepared. So that concerns me a little bit. It does. But if you take away those plays that are those manufactured plays, just break down the other plays, he throws it really well, really well from the pocket. I think his greatest thing, and he's the best deep ball thrower in this draft. Deep, and that's big in the NFL because, and Jeff, you know, you only get really three or four shots in a game to push the ball downfield.
If you have it.
And they have such an impact on the outcome of the game. And you can't be that team or that quarterback that goes, oh, we just missed. Oh, we'll get it next time. You got to hit them. And he hits them consistently, so I love that about him. I'd have to find out about this about him. The height thing doesn't – it only concerns me if this. Drew Brees and Russell Wilson have minimized the height issue because they have become obsessed with their craft, obsessed with it. And
offenses
have done a good job of moving them around, changing where they throw, backside A-gap, frontside A-gap, half roll, backside B-gap, full rollout. They've always done that. So, one, he needs to be in an offense that's going to do that for him. Two, I need to find out if he's got the same obsessive traits that Russell Wilson and Drew Brees do. Because if he does, then I know he'll overcome that deficiency.
Sure.
If he doesn't, then it does become an issue. So I do like him. I really do. I don't – you know, I think it's really hard for me to sit here and go, man, we're going to find five really good quarterbacks in this draft. We only have 10 in the NFL every year.
Right.
So, you know – I like him. He's just got to be put in the exact right location.
And just real quick, in terms of being obsessive with his craft, are you talking about being able to find those throwing lanes in the pocket and being able to anticipate to get the ball in the right spot? Is that going to be the biggest challenge for him at that size, throwing from the pocket, is finding those passing lanes and even seeing his wide receivers come open over the middle of the field?
Oh, absolutely. And I referenced Drew Brees and Russell, and I'll give you guys this example. So when you're setting up, you know, pass game concepts, play action, set up in the backside B-gap, first thing is people might not think like backside B-gap to the behind the center. There's only about 3 feet of difference, essentially. People may not think that's a huge deal. It's a huge deal because everything's married together. Mm-hmm. If he, you know, the backside B-gap, offensive line coaches are going to educate their offensive linemen. Listen, Baker's launching point is the backside B-gap. So that's going to – they're going to move with that. They're going to set the passing lane with that. And then those receivers' depths are going to be with that. So that's what I'm talking about, being obsessed with – listen, if the play tells me to set up in the backside B-gap, I can't set up in the backside B-plus gap, you know, the foot over.
Sure.
I can't set up behind the center. I've got to be obsessed with how this thing works together. And that's what Russell Wilson and Drew Brees have done. And that's why it's worked. And so, yeah, that's
– good point.
He's just got to have that – obsession with every single little detail. That's what I have to find out about him.
Yeah, and you know, it makes sense, because if you're going to design this offense around these intangibles, around Baker Mayfield, and put all the time in with the routes for the receivers, you've got to have that obsession about being in the right place and making those throws from the quarterback position, or it's just all not going to work. So yeah, I see that's a great point you make. We got one last quarterback, Josh Rosen, who a lot of the guys are – you know, this is their – this. We can talk about all these guys. I know that this was the one who seems to be the most ready to play in the NFL, I would say, from a lot of people.
And he probably did the most pro things in college.
And I think that, you know, he did well and all those kinds of things. Tell us a little bit about from your perspective. And, by the way, you're doing a great job just really from somebody that played to position.
Oh, it's great.
It's very good, nice to hear a lot of the things that quarterbacks themselves think about when they go to evaluating these guys. So, Josh Rosen, what do you think about him?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. I love Rosen. I flat out love him. You know, again, trying to find guys that change games. Rosen does two things that are so, so, so special. I mean, first of all, we live in the golden era of the quarterback mind. Defenses, like I've been saying, they do more. They're disguised more. They're intricate. They offenses ask quarterbacks to do more at the line of scrimmage informationally. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to think. Tom Brady played at 40 and won the MVP because of his brain, not his physical attributes. Drew Brees, Kirk Cousins, the number one, two free agent quarterbacks, not because of their physical attributes. Nick Foles wins MVP of the Super Bowl, not because of his physical stuff. It's all because of their minds. So Rosen, in contrary to Josh Allen, Rosen's got this great, you see it on tape, he's got this great plan and process every single play. Every single play, he knows what the problem is, what's going on, and he runs the line of scrimmage. There's some clips, I'm going to put them on my Twitter probably in the next 10 days I have, of him against Memphis. And there's just this play. He gets up, and I fell in love with it. He gets up at the line of scrimmage, and they're in a little bit of a no-huddle offense. So he gets up at the line of scrimmage, and he like gets under center. There's a play called. And then, like, you could just see from his body language, like, huh, something's up. He backs off the line of scrimmage, kind of goes up and down the line of scrimmage, communicates to his offensive lineman, sends, like, this super incognito hand signal to a receiver, backs out, touchdown. So you told me two things. You knew exactly what was going on. And you either changed the play or rerouted the play. You either totally called a new play or just changed the receiver's route in touchdown. For me, that's quarterbacking. That's quarterbacking. And when you can do that at the college level, I know that I've got an open playbook at the NFL level. And then if all the quarterbacks, the guys who are the most accurate guys in the NFL, they play with great rhythm all the time. Their rhythm is great. He plays with awesome, awesome rhythm, and that's why he's accurate consistently. Yes, he's refined and efficient. He plays with awesome rhythm, and so I love him. You know, when people talk about does he love football, I go watch the Texas A&M game against UCLA last year. He gets beat down for three quarters. I mean, beat down. And take it from a guy who, you know, when I had to play, I got beat up a little bit. To get up off the ground consistently like that, something else is getting you up. You know, you're not getting it up if you don't love it. If you don't love it. And then watch the fourth quarter and the emotion he plays with his teammates. He leads them back to a huge win. And you don't do that for a guy who everyone says, quote unquote, doesn't need football. It would have been easy for him to stay on the ground. He kept getting up. That's all I need to know about the kid. That's all I need to know. So, you know, I love his game.
Dan, I got two more for you. One of the rest of the class, I know Lamar Jackson is considered by many in that same top group. I have him kind of with Josh Allen below the top three guys. From the rest of the group, including Jackson, anybody really jump out at you that you think is being short-sold here a little bit as a quarterback coming out in this class?
Yeah, a little bit, but he's not going to be an earlier pick. He'll be a later pick and maybe an undrafted guy, but I think he's got a chance. He's from Toledo, Logan Woodside, and you know, when I saw him at the combine, I never heard of him. I watched him throw, and I was like, huh. He throws it very naturally, which is a big deal to me. Very natural throw the ball. He's a little bit shorter, but I love the way he moved. And then I went and go watch his tape against Toledo. And this is what stood out to me. He played his best football against the teams that outmanned Toledo. He played against Miami and lit them up.
At that game, and he was putting balls in some spaces. I could not believe how well he threw the football, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think he reminds you a little bit of a Case Keenum type guy. You know, he'll be taken a little bit later because he's undersized and whatnot. But I just liked when I watched him throw on tape and when I watched him move, he looked like he was playing quarterback. He didn't look like he was just a thrower.
Very good, Dan. And I know you haven't scouted Davis Webb, who right now is the Giants' backup quarterback. So I'm going to ask you a more general question. He was here last year. In training camp, he didn't even take reps with the first or second team. He was kind of in a separate opportunity section with undrafted rookies and things like that. He took about, I think, two dozen practice reps in December. never got on the field in the game situation, played a couple fourth quarters in the preseason. So the Giants' experience with him on the field is extremely limited. All they have is his tape at Cal when he played in, you know, read half the field, air raid, not really reading the defense type of system. How much can the Giants coaches, who, by the way, weren't even here last year, are just going off of tape, how much can they know about Davis Webb in addition to what they saw from him and did from their scouting in college? How much can that experience in the building with him, seeing him in practice, seeing the tape from practice, really help their evaluation of him as they decide if they want to take a quarterback in this year's draft?
Yeah, they're going to certainly rely on, and that's one of the good things about the NFL is all these coaches, even if you're not planning on your team taking a quarterback, they all do their evaluations of all the quarterbacks come out in the draft. So they'll tap into those evaluations if they like them or dislike them. Here's the reality. Pat Shurmur did an evaluation on Davis Webb last year. We don't know what it was.
Nope.
He may not have liked it. He may not like to have liked, you know, his evaluation on him. So he might be behind the eight ball to begin with. You just don't know. That's one of the downsides of the league. You know, I'm sure they've spent some time with him, especially in the next couple weeks, but I look at it like this. You're picking at number two if you're the New York Giants. And you're picking at two hoping that you never do it again. And so you have to, again, find game changers. Eli has changed your organization for the better part of 15 years.
Yep.
And I'm going, there's a guy that's probably going to be sitting there, most likely in Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold, that gives you a really, really good opportunity to change your organization for the next dozen years. Don't get cute with it. Don't overthink it. You know, because to be honest with you, Rosen reminds me a lot of Eli.
Yeah, me
14
too.
Years ago. And so, you know, it's not anything against Davis Webb. You have this opportunity. Make sure you're not picking here again anytime soon.
Sure.
Dan, that was wonderful. Great information.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm definitely going to keep your information. Let's talk again soon. Tremendous analysis. I think we all learned a lot. Thanks so much for the time, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
No, thank you. We'll
all right,
talk soon.
Have a good weekend.
Absolutely. Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback. Boy, that was some.
I like how he breaks it down.
That was some quarterbacking 101 right there, wasn't it?
I like how he breaks it down when you get to the line of scrimmage in that 4 seconds. You know, the defense gives you an opportunity and it takes away from you, so you better know which one to get into quickly.
All right, we're going to do our lobsters in a second, but I want to get the two guys of held. I want to do rapid fire, guys. Either 1 point or one question, then we got to get to the next caller. Dan in Hawaii, Mr. Salamone. He's up first. What's up, Dan?
Hey guys, Seagulls.
Hey Dan.
Johnny, how you doing?
We're great.
Hey, one thing I just wanted to say, the thing the Giants have lacked for probably 5 to 7 years is the ability to control the ball on offense. And the reason they can't do that is they don't have a powerful line. Give me a lineman. Give me Quentin Nelson or trade down. Give me Hernandez and give me another one.
All right.
I think that's fair, Dan.
Got the talent. All right, guys.
Thank you.
Look, there's no question that the Giants still have work to do in the offense. When they added Nate Solder, they added Patrick Amame, they're not done.
No, they're not.
I would expect, whether they trade down or not, Dan, I would be surprised if there wasn't an offensive lineman drafted sometime in the first 4 rounds of this
there
draft.
There will be, and you know, there's one that they're interviewing today, according to you know people, right?
But we don't talk about that, Jeff.
But I'm not telling you who
no,
it is.
No, we don't talk about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, every team does their interviews with these guys.
I know,
so.
But we don't
but
talk
I will
about
tell
that.
You, I would be surprised if the Giants did not draft some sort of an offensive lineman at any position of the five in this draft.
I would like to walk into the building. I'm on the install of a job, so I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
Let's go to Steve in Atlanta. Steve, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, buddy?
Thank you for having that guy on.
Yeah.
It was wonderful because I don't understand why – quarterback is in top of everybody's mind. I mean, just
now
in the
do.
Value. You talked a lot about value, John, and just to put numbers on the value, Kirk Cousins is getting $30 million guaranteed for 3 years, right? The best running, and he's an average quarterback.
Yeah.
The best running back is getting, he's trying to get Bell, right? Running back and receiver. Trying to get at max $15 million.
Steve, right now, the highest paid running back in football is Devontae Freeman. He got a contract smaller than Weston Richburg.
Okay, so look, $15 million for your best running back, $30 million for an average quarterback. So when you're looking at value, you have to look at quarterback. And if you're not in love with any of these quarterbacks, which I don't understand how you're not, then you got to trade. Because take the value now. Why would you take a positional player? It doesn't make – I don't know. It just – we're trying to win a Super Bowl. You need a good quarterback.
You got to be in love with
Thank
one
you,
of
Steve.
Them.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate
the call, buddy. You got to be in love with one of them that's going to go down what you just said, and that's value. And you got to hope that and Rosen does remind you a lot of Eli Manning. When you think about this the way he is, he's not a runner. You know, he's a smart guy.
And he'll even, like, throw off his back foot when he gets pressured. He does all that stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe –
even some of the bad stuff Eli does, Rosen does that too.
You just kind of wish you just knew what these guys – everybody was talking about and who they liked.
And I would love Rosen at two. The injury stuff does scare me. And yeah. I'm with Dan. I don't get into the whole personality doesn't love football thing. I don't. I haven't seen enough and heard enough for me to buy that. I'm not saying it's not a thing. I just don't know it's a thing, so I can't do it. But I know how many games he missed because of injury, and he couldn't finish the last 2 years, and he's a pretty slight guy. So that's what I worry about there.
Yeah,
if that injury problem wasn't there, him and Darnold will be right next to each other, one and two on my board, bing, bam, boom,
I think
done.
The injury problem, it lends itself to the theory of, I don't need football, that kind of thing.
So you remember how I always go back and forth between Mayfield and Rosen? Because of Orlovsky, now I'm back on Rosen. I was on Mayfield as of yesterday.
It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting. And it was very interesting what Dan had mentioned about, a guy that has to be committed to that position.
Ooh,
and understanding
so
from how small he is. Great interview. That was a really good. And it's nice to get somebody that played the position for 10 years in the NFL. That's the guy I want to listen to. Okay, that's the guy that understands kind of some of the concepts that a lot of people don't understand.
Absolutely.
All right, so we are ready.
We are ready.
John's going to cue it up here. This is a special day.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the head.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
You going to bring the whole thing over here?
Yeah.
Charlie in Portland, Maine. How are you, Charlie?
Chuckles.
Good, John. Hey, Jeff.
All right, so if you folks that don't know out there, Charlie's one of our frequent callers. Last offseason, make sure you stay in the shot, Jeff, please.
I know. I gotta somehow do this, okay?
How about you put this in between us? How about you do that?
Can I still in the shot?
Okay?
Whoa!
There you go. Are you okay there, buddy? You're almost going to fall down. You almost hurt Jeff here, Charlie. So Charlie was a big Anthony Dabwe fan, as he liked to call him Pepe Le Pew. And when the Giants let him go, Charlie believed that Pepe would be a 53-man roster guy for the Atlanta Falcons. And Jeff disagreed. They promptly bet some Maine lobsters. I have nothing to do with this. It's just Jeff and Charlie.
Jeff and me.
And it was the easiest bet Jeff ever won. Dabwe did not make the 53-man roster. And finally, the lobsters have arrived from Maine. It said it on the box. I kid you not. And now Jeff will present his prize here.
Let's get a little bit of a preview. What I'm going to be.
Is there an octopus in there?
No.
There's something that looks like an octopus. I mean, these things right here could resemble an octopus. There's some sort of a.
How many lobsters are in here, Charlie?
How many are here, Charlie?
I sent you 10.
That's very generous.
Okay, so is there any kind of.
Thank you.
Listen, they got rubber bands around the claws.
Oh, take one out. Take one out.
I'm just going to try to figure out the best way to take one out here, Charlie. And I know you're not going to tell me because you want me to get bit.
How about this guy right here? I think that's a good one.
Yeah,
just
all right.
Put your hand way down deep inside.
Are you serious? Okay, hold on. Look at this, John.
This is great. Go get it. Don't look at me. Dude, I had this box in my office for an hour and a half, okay?
Right,
and I heard them moving
there
in there.
You go.
So it was freaking me out. So I'm not touching them. This is all you, my friend.
Well, this
Make
guy,
sure
go
moving.
Get it. This guy,
no, they're moving all right.
This is all scary. Right.
Go get in there, Jeff.
Shut
come
up,
on.
Schmelk. You're not going in there.
No, I know. I did it with the bet.
There's only two claws, right? Oh, look at this.
There's only two claws.
Look at
they
this guy.
Whoa, this guy's coming up.
They got rubber bands. You can pick them up. Pick them up by the tail.
I can't get to the tail, Charlie. They're put in backwards. All right, here
there
we
go.
Okay, here we go.
Lift it up for me. Whoa, man, this guy's feisty.
There we go. There it is. Oh, look, this guy's got one missing.
Oh, he picked out the right one. He's
all right, well, this Charlie, thank you so much for the bet. I will tell you, and
hey, no problem.
And these are going
Enjoy
so
them.
They're going
Enjoy
in the
them
pot.
With some good butter or whatever you're going to use on them.
Okay, any recommendations?
Yeah, usually just have some butter, drawn butter. You know, get some potatoes with them.
All right.
Yeah, and there should be some stuff in there. I hope they sent you some like dibs and all that stuff.
There could be some at the bottom.
At the bottom, but I don't see anything else.
Yeah,
so,
there you go. You got one there.
All right.
There he is, right from Maine.
Charlie, this is wonderful. Thank you very much. And again, you didn't have to send 10. That's a very good job out of you.
Oh, that's all right. I would have sent you more, but the prices went up. So, but I think you got enough for your family, Jeff.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We will let you.
And Jeff will make sure these get cooked the right way, and they'll get done, and he will have some excellent lobster.
Tell your cook to put their heads in first, and they don't suffer so much.
And the next time I'm on the show, I will tell you how I prepared them and how I ate them, Charlie.
Okay.
And anytime you want to do another bet, just let me know.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, buddy. Thank you for coming through. We appreciate that.
Hey, he's a man of his word. Thank you, Charlie. He's a good man. And he stuck by his bet, sent the lobsters, did a great
job. Charlie sent us one lobster for every new lineman that he wants on the Giants.
That's true. And by the way, we've had some great shows with some great guests. I think this might have been the best one of the spring so far. It's fantastic. Dan Orlovsky, Phil Savage did a great job. Thanks so much. Next week, our draft process continues. It's LSU with Dottino and Lance on Monday, and they'll make sure we get some extra time for your calls on Monday's show as well. That should be our only guest. LSU. For Jeff Eagles, I'm John Schmelk. Thank you to Charlie for the lobsters.
Thank you, Charlie. Chuckles.
And we'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. It's 70 degrees outside this weekend.
Go.
Go out and have some fun.
Play some golf.
It's going to be 40 on Monday, so enjoy it while it lasts. We'll see you then, everybody.
See you later, guys.